This is a reading from Tehoba Prophecy by Michael Desmarque, first published as Abduction to the Ninth Planet. Believing is not enough. You need to know. The preface: I have written this book as the result of orders received and which I have obeyed. Further, it is an account of events that happened to me personally. This I affirm. I imagine that, to some extent, this extraordinary story will appear to some readers as science fiction, a story entirely invented, but I do not have the imagination that such a fabrication would require. This is not science fiction. The reader of good faith will be able to recognize the truth in the message I transmit from my new friends to the people of the planet Earth. This message, in spite of numerous references to races and religions, reflects neither racial nor religious bias on behalf of the author. Signed, Michael Desmarque, January 1989. They have eyes, but they do not see, ears, and they do not hear. Quote the Bible. Reading first, chapter 3. Page 30, The First Man on Earth. Once comfortably reestablished in the Hylas, the relaxation room previously described, Tao began her strange recital. Michael, 1,350,000 years ago precisely, on the planet Bacaratini of the constellation Centaur, a decision was made by the leaders of that planet following numerous conferences and expeditions to send inhabited vessels to the planets Mars and Earth. There was a very simple reason for this. Their planet was cooling down internally and would become uninhabitable within 500 years. They thought with good reason that it was preferable to evacuate their people to a younger planet of the same category. What do you mean by the same category? I will explain later. To do so now would be premature. Going back to these people, I must tell you that these beings were human, very intelligent and highly evolved, a black race. They had thick lips, flattened noses, and frizzy hair, resembling in these ways the blacks now living on Earth. These people had inhabited the planet Bacaratini for 8 million years in cohabitation with a yellow-colored race. To be precise, this was what you call on Earth the Chinese race, and they had inhabited Bacaratini for about 400 years prior to the blacks. The two races witnessed numerous revolutions during their time on the planet. We tried to provide relief, assistance, and guidance, but in spite of our intervention, wars broke out periodically. These, along with the natural disasters occurring on the planet, served to thin the ranks in both races. Finally, under a nuclear war that broke out on such a grand scale that the entire planet was plunged into darkness and temperatures fell to minus 40 of your degrees Celsius. Not only did atomic radiation destroy the population, but cold and lack of food accomplished the rest. It is recorded fact that a mere 150 black people and 85 yellow people survived the catastrophe from a population of 7 billion black and 4 billion yellow humans. A register of survivors was taken just before they began to reproduce and when they had stopped killing each other. What do you mean, killing each other? Let me explain the whole situation to you, and you'll be able to understand better. First of all, it is important to explain that those who remained were not, as you might expect, the leaders, well protected in specially equipped shelters. The survivors, comprising three groups of blacks and five groups of yellows, had come, some from private shelters and others from large public shelters. Of course, at the time of the war, There were many more than 235 people in shelters. Indeed, it is believed that there were over 800,000 in all. Following months of a confinement in the darkness and intense cold, they were eventually able to risk going outside. The blacks ventured out first, finding almost no trees, no plants, and no animals to speak of on their continent. It was a group isolated from their shelter in the mountains who first knew cannibalism. Because of the lack of food, when the weakest died, they were eaten. Then, in order to eat, they had to kill each other, and that was the worst catastrophe on their planet. Another group near the ocean managed to survive by eating the only living things left on the planet, which were not too contaminated, that is, the molluscs, some fish. They still had unpolluted drinking water thanks to very ingenious installations enabling them to obtain water from incredible depths. Of course, many of these people still died as a result of lethal radiation on the planet and from eating fish, which were filled with radioactivity. Much the same course of events occurred in the Yellows' territory, so that, as I have said, 150 blacks and 85 yellows remained. Then finally, deaths resulting from the war ceased and reproduction began again. All of this occurred in spite of all the warnings they had received. It should be said that before this almost total decimation, both the black race and the yellow race had attained a very high level of technological advance. The people lived in great comfort. They worked in factories, private and government enterprises, offices, just as happens now on your planet. They had a strong devotion to money, which to some meant power, and to others, wiser, it meant well-being. They worked on average 12 hours per week. On Barkaratini, a week comprises of 6 days of 21 hours each. They tended to the material rather than the spiritual side of their existence. At the same time, they allowed themselves to be duped and led in circles by a structure of politicians and bureaucrats, exactly as is happening now on Earth. Leaders fool the masses with empty words, and motivated by greed and pride, they lead entire nations towards their downfall. Gradually, these two great races began to envy each other, and as there is only one step from envy to hate, eventually they hate each other so much and so completely, the catastrophic occurred. Both possessing very sophisticated arms, they achieved their mutual destruction. Our historical records show, then, that 235 survived the disaster, 6 of them being children. These statistics were recorded 5 years afterwards, and their survival is attributed to cannibalism and certain marine life. They reproduced, not always successfully, as it was not uncommon for babies to be born with horribly misshapen heads or ugly weeping sores. They had to endure all the effects of atomic radiation on human beings. 150 years later, there were 190,000 blacks, men, women, and children, and 85,000 yellows. I speak to you of this 150-year period because this was when both races began to reestablish, and we were able to help them materially. What do you mean? Just a few hours ago, you saw our spacecraft stop above the planet Arimo, X3, and take samples of soil, water, and air, did you not? I nodded. Then, Tao resumed, you watched as we quite easily annihilated a mass of giant ants as they attacked the inhabitants of a village. Indeed, in that particular case, we helped those people by intervening directly. You saw that they were living in a semi-wild state. Yes, but what happened on that planet? Atomic war, my friend. Always and eternally the same story. Don't forget, Mikkel, that the universe is a gigantic atom. And everything is affected by that. Your body is composed of atoms. My point is, in all galaxies, each time a planet is inhabited, at a certain stage in its evolution, the atom is discovered or rediscovered. Of course, the scientists who discover it are very soon aware that the disintegration of the atom can be a formidable weapon, and at any one moment or another, the leaders want to use it, just as a child with a box of matches is driven to set fire to a bale of straw in order to see what happens. But coming back to the planet Bacchartini, 150 years after the nuclear holocaust, we wanted to help these people. Their immediate need was food. Still, they were subsisting essentially from products of the sea, resorting occasionally to cannibalism to satisfy their omnivorous yearnings. They needed vegetables and a source of meat. Vegetables, fruit trees, grains, animals, all that was edible had disappeared from the planet. There remained just enough inedible plants and bushes to replenish the oxygen in the atmosphere. At the same time, an insect, resembling in some ways your praying mantis, had survived, and as a result of spontaneous mutation caused by the atomic radiation, had evolved to gigantic proportions. It grew to about 8 meters in height and had become extremely dangerous to the people. In addition, this insect had no natural predator, reproduced rapidly. We flew over the planet locating the whereabouts of these insects. This was a relatively easy task thanks to technology that had been at our disposal since time immemorial. When we detected the insects, we destroyed them so that in a short time we had exterminated them. Next, we had to reintroduce livestock, plants, and trees on the planet according to the species known to have adapted climatically in specific regions before the catastrophe. This, too, was relatively easy. It must have taken years for such a task. A large smile lit up Tao's face. It took just 2 days. 2 21-hour days. Faced with my incredulity, Tao burst into laughter. She, or he, laughed so heartily that I joined in, still wondering, however, if the truth was being stretched somewhat. How could I know? What I was hearing was so fantastic. Perhaps I was hallucinating. Perhaps I had been drugged. Perhaps I would soon wake up in my very own bed. No, Michael, interrupted Tao, reading my thoughts. I wish you would stop doubting in this way. Telepathy itself should be enough to convince you. As she uttered this sentence, it struck me that even the best planned hoax, it would hardly be possible to bring together so many supernatural elements. Tao was able to read my mind like an open book and proved it over and over again. Latoli, simply by placing her hand on me, has produced such an extraordinary feeling of well-being, I must acknowledge the evidence. I was well and truly experiencing an extraordinary adventure. Perfect, Tao agreed out loud. May I continue? Please do, I encouraged. So, we helped these people materially. But as so often when we intervene, we did not allow our presence to be known, and there are several reasons for that. The first is insecurity. The second reason is a psychological one. If we had made these people aware of our existence, and if they had realized we were there in order to help them, they would passively have allowed themselves to be helped and would have felt sorry for themselves. This would adversely affect their will to survive. As you say on Earth, God helps those who help themselves. The third and last reason is the main one. Universal law is well established and is as strictly enforced as that which controls the planet's revolutions around their suns. If you make a mistake, you pay the penalty. If you make a mistake, you pay the penalty immediately. in 10 years' time or in 10 centuries' time, but errors must be paid for. Thus, from time to time, we are permitted or even advised to offer a helping hand, but we are formally forbidden to serve the meal on a plate. Thus, in 2 days, we repopulated their planet with several pairs of animals and reestablished numerous plants so that eventually the people could raise the animals and cultivate the plants and trees. They had to start from scratch, and we guided their progress, either by dream or telepathy. At times, we did it by means of a voice coming from the heavens. That is to say, the voice came from our spacecraft, but to them, it came from heaven. They must have taken you to be gods. Exactly so. And it is in this way that legends and religions are established. But in cases as urgent as that one was, the end justified the means. Finally, after several centuries, the planet was almost as it had been before the nuclear holocaust. All the same time, in some places, deserts had been definitively established. In other spots less affected, the flora and fauna were easily developed. 150,000 years later, the civilization was highly successful, but this time not only technologically, happily the people had learned their lesson, and it also evolved to a highly psychic and spiritual level. This occurred in both races, and the blacks and the yellows had developed strong bonds of friendship. Thus, peace reigned on the planet, for the legends remained quite clear, many of them recorded in writing, so that future generations would know exactly what had provoked the nuclear catastrophe and what its consequences had been. As I said earlier, the people knew that their planet was going to become uninhabitable within 500 years. Knowing there were other planets inhabited and inhabitable in the galaxy, they mounted one of the most serious exploration expeditions. Eventually, they penetrated your solar system, first visiting Mars, which was known to be inhabitable, and which at that time, in fact, was inhabited. The human beings on Mars had no technology, but by contrast, they were spiritually highly evolved. They were very small people, measuring in height between 120 centimeters and 150 centimeters, and of mongoloid type. They lived in tribes and huts of stone. The fauna on Mars was scarce. There was a kind of dwarf goat, some very large hare-like creatures, several species of rats, and the largest animal resembled a buffalo but had a head like a tapir. There were also some birds and three species of snakes, one of which was quite venomous. The flora was also poor, trees attaining no more than 4 meters in height. They had, too, an edible grass that you might compare with buckwheat. The Barkaritinians conducted their research, realizing soon that Mars was also cooling down at a rate which indicated that it would no longer be inhabitable in 4,000 to 5,000 years. In terms of its flora and fauna, it was barely rich enough to sustain those already living there, let alone cope with an emigrant mass from Barkaritini. Besides, the planet did not appeal to them. Thus, the two spacecraft headed for Earth. The first landing took place where Australia is now. At that time, it should be explained that Australia, New Guinea, Indonesia, and Malaysia were all part of the one continent. A strait existed about 300 kilometers wide, exactly where Thailand is now found. In those times, Australia possessed a great inland sea fed by several large rivers, so that diverse and interesting flora and fauna flourished there. All things considered, the astronauts chose this country as their first immigration base. I must say, to be more precise, that the black race chose Australia and the yellow people established themselves where Burma is now. Here, too, was a land rich in wildlife. Bases were quickly set up on the coast, on the Bay of Bengal, while the black people constructed their first base on the shores of the Inland Sea in Australia. Later, further bases were established where New Guinea is presently located. Their spacecraft was capable of superlight speeds and took approximately 50 of your Earth years to bring 3,600,000 black people and the same number of the yellow race to Earth. This bears witness to the perfect understanding and excellent association between two races determined to survive on a planet that is new and exist in peace. By common agreement, the aged and infirmed remained in Barkarotini. The Barkarotinians had explored all of the planet Earth before establishing their bases, and they were absolutely persuaded that no human life existed before their arrival. Often they thought they had located a humanoid form of life, but on closer inspection realized they had made contact with a species of large apes. Gravity on Earth was stronger than on their planet, and it was quite uncomfortable initially for the two races, but eventually they adapted very well. In building their towns and factories, they were fortunate to import from Barkarotini certain materials which were very light and at the same time very strong. I have not yet explained that at that time, Australia was on the equator. Earth rotated on a different axis, taking 30 hours and 12 minutes to complete a rotation, and achieved a revolution around its sun in 280 such days. The equatorial climate was not as you will find it today. It was much more humid than now, for the Earth's atmosphere has changed. Herds of huge zebras roamed the country in company with enormous edible birds referred to as dodos, very large jaguars, and another bird measuring almost 4 meters in height, which you have called Deinonychus. In certain rivers, there were crocodiles up to 15 meters in length and snakes 25 to 30 meters long. They at times nourished themselves on the new arrivals. Most of the flora and fauna on Earth was totally different from that on Barkarotini, both from a nutritional and ecological point of view. Numerous experimental farms were established in an endeavor to acclimatize plants such as sunflower, maize, wheat, tapioca, and others. These plants either didn't exist on Earth or else existed in such a primitive state that they couldn't be consumed. The goat and the kangaroo were both imported, for the immigrants were quite partial to these, consuming them in great numbers on their planet. They were particularly keen to raise kangaroos on Earth, experiencing enormous difficulties, however, in acclimatizing them. One of the main problems was food. On Barkarotini, the kangaroo fed on a fine, hardy grass called arilu, which was totally unknown on Earth. Each time the Barkarotinis tried to grow it, it died, attacked always by millions of microscopic fungi. So it happened that the kangaroo were hand-fed, so to speak, for several decades as they gradually adapted to the grasses on Earth. The black race persevered in its endeavors and finally succeeded in growing the plant, but it had taken so long that the kangaroos no longer required more than their new pastures. Very much later, some arilu plants took root, and as there were no animals to eat them, they spread throughout Australia. They still exist under the botanical name Xanthoria and the popular name grass trees. But that often happens when species are introduced from other planets. This plant is one of the rare vestiges of those distant times. It indicates, by being found only in Australia, along with the kangaroo, that the Barkarotinians remained in that particular part of the planet for a very long time before seeking to colonize other parts. I'm about to explain this, but I wanted first to cite the examples of the kangaroo and the Xanthoria so that you might better understand all the problems of adaptation these people had to overcome. Of course, it is only one small example among so many others. And that's stopping right now on page 37, still on chapter 3. Just a small insight into the reading of the book, again, by Michael Desmarquet, Tehoba Prophecy, first published as Abduction to the Ninth Planet, Believing is Not Enough, You Need to Know. Briefly reading the back, there's many questions on the back of the book here. Why are we alive? Why are we conscious? What happens after death and before we are conceived? Why? What happened to advanced civilizations and continents? In parentheses, Mu, Atlantis. Shall we also face a global catastrophe? When, what, why? Why are the greatest dangers for humanity on Earth? Should we dream or act? Can we change the system without hurting anyone? Whoever seeks answers to any of the above will find this book truly fascinating. There are no theories in this book, no wishful thinking or fantasy. It is an exact witness report of the reality of the universe. Are you ready? Something to think about and just consider reading.